Well, there's a difference between the suicidal ideation and full scale being truly suicidal, right? I lived with suicidal ideation for 20 plus years, where I was thinking about it sometimes all the time. And it's absolutely for those people that, you know, because people like that, myself included, it's not so much that I wanted to die, I just didn't want to live. That's a big difference. I needed help learning how to live.
Hey guys, I'm Ashley Dawn Rivard, and you are now Into the Dawn, a provocative podcast that looks at all things taboo, such as suicide, grief, sex, addictions, and more. Each week, I talk with experts who successfully investigate their areas of interest. And if you like what you hear, please remember to subscribe. Tina Cat Courtney, the afterlife coach, is a traditionally trained shaman and plant medicine guide with 15 years of experience working in altered spaces. Kat also works as a psychedelics integration coach, helping people make sense of transformative experiences in spiritual crises. Kat also has the honor of working with people facing the reality and sacred truth about death. She is passionate about bringing joy and levity to shadow work, the expansion of consciousness, and death itself. Kat and I, we met 3 years ago in Costa Rica. It was my first experience with ayahuasca, and thank God you were my guide. And that was how you and I met. So I want to know what brought you to ayahuasca.
Hi, Ashley. Probably the same thing that brought you and most people is just a need for healing, a desire to discover if there's something more than the kind of rat race life that I was living, and found out there was. You know, ayahuasca, that was the tool that helped to turn me around from bulimia, alcoholism, just a lot of self-destructive tendencies, and a lot of sadness and anxiety. So that's what brought me to the medicine. I didn't think it would work. And here I am. It was been about 16 years since I first drank her.
So you were a skeptic prior?
Yes, for sure. I couldn't even keep a houseplant alive, let alone think that some consciousness in a plant was going to help me, but I was willing to try.
Okay, so you were basically at your wit's end. Mm-hmm. There's got to be another way.
Yeah, yeah. And somebody had said the word ayahuasca to me, and everything in me kind of lit up. Okay, I'll have that experience. But honestly, I went to the jungle. I thought I was just going for fun times on drugs, basically. You know, yeah, I'll have a good time. But it's not going to change anything.
And now how many times have you drank?
1,000 to 1,500, somewhere in there.
Wow. So what is the origin, for those people who don't know, who don't even know the word ayahuasca, what is the origin of it and what is it specifically designed for?
Origin of it, it's a tea that consists of two core plants. It's ayahuasca and typically another plant called chacruna. Chacruna has DMT in it, and DMT is an alkaloid that shows up in our bodies day 49 of gestation in our pineal glands. They don't know why, they meaning the medical community. But it's also released in our dream state, and it's released when we die. So ayahuasca has it too. And it's a tea that has been used for at least 4,000 documented years, likely a lot longer than that. But we know at least 4,000 years by the Amazonian tribes. Various tribes do it in different ways. But they've used it for this period of time, essentially for two reasons, for healing and for the expansion of consciousness, to remember who we really are beyond just the egos and the beautiful but still limiting bodies that we live in. So that's the core reason that ayahuasca has been persistent for 4,000 years. She's a healer, and she helps us wake up.
So you mentioned something right in the very beginning, saying when you went to drink it, you thought, this drug, right? And you hear it now in modern language in two ways. You hear it as being called a plant medicine and a drug. What would you say about that?
It's a really great question, because I understand the propensity to loop it in with the category of drugs. But I will tell you, the moment I realized that it was medicine and what that meant. It's the morning after the first time I worked with ayahuasca. I felt amazing. I was tired from the intensity, but my body was buzzing. I felt like more of myself. And that, to me, is the difference between a drug and a medicine. A drug may give us a good time, may mask pain, may give us a temporary feeling of feeling better, but it does not make us more of ourselves. Medicine does that. That's how at least I define it. So without a doubt, ayahuasca is a plant medicine. She is not a good time. Quite often, it's really difficult, right?
We don't. Right.
I'm on drugs. This is not that medicine. So that's.
Well, it's a hallucinogenic, right? So people would, like, if you. Maybe it's the stereotype that's out there, especially in the Western cultures, of, oh, you're going to take some mushrooms and you're going to, you know, have a good time or hallucinate.
Get high.
Get high. But this is not that.
No, it's not that. It's like a deep journey into the darkest parts of your psyche. Because if you think about it, if this is a medicine that helps us to heal and wake up, that's where we need to go. Eventually, may not happen in the first ceremony, but eventually, I mean, my joke with it is that if there's a box inside of you that says, do not look here, ayahuasca's going there happily. Ooh, what's in here? What you got? You know, no matter how much we protest, because those are the things, the experiences, the emotions that are holding us back from being more of ourselves. And we can compartmentalize them, but they don't go away, right? We do all this repression of, oh, I don't want to remember that. I don't want to feel that. I don't want to think about that. But it's not as if that makes it go away. We still carry it with us.
Have you tried Western medicines or prescription, right? Like for anxiety, depression, how does this differ with the propensity of how it, you know, heals you?
Yeah. They're night and day. Yes, I have tried. Well, I mean, I was diagnosed bipolar, age 20, 21, put on antidepressants, also worked with Xanax for anxiety. So and I wanted to be a psychiatrist when I grew up. You know, I wanted to help these things. What I discovered, well, actually, in the words of the psychiatrist I was training with, is like, they don't really even understand the core of how the brain works. He described it that those SSRIs and MAOIs, if you imagine a surgeon uses a scalpel, those are like a machete. They're going in there trying to do their thing, but it's certainly not precise. And really what ends up happening is you can get through a really bad patch of depression and darkness with those drugs, but they don't heal, right? They don't bring us to an awareness of what got us there to begin with. It's like a pause button that gets pressed when we take those, and they're awesome as a life raft when we need them. They don't facilitate healing. And that's where medicines like ayahuasca can come in, because they can give us the opportunity of learning and feeling why it is that we got depressed and anxious. We weren't born that way. That's not our natural state of being.
Yeah. So what are the possibilities with the plants?
Well, that's endless. The possibilities, we are the ones that have to deal with our perception of limitation. The medicines, the plant medicines, part of the reason why they're so difficult to work with is they are so expansive. So the possibilities are endless, but there's this kind of mystery to when it is our time to heal and to wake up, right? Because even our sincere intention and effort and willingness to dive in and surrender to ayahuasca, it does not guarantee that we will get whatever we are seeking. It's possible. But, you know, we can't say that this is a quick fix, that it's going to work for whatever ails you. But I can say that, you know, regardless, it's going to give us more information. When we work with these medicines, we come out with a higher degree of what it is that we're working with. And quite often we get homework, right, of what we can do in our regular lives to continue to heal and awaken and expand.
So who then is the right candidate for this medicine, and who is not?
I'm going to answer the last part first. The people that aren't candidates are, first of all, people with really extreme medical histories of things like heart issues, seizures, anything that a higher degree of, like, your blood pressure going up in intensity could put your body at risk. those people are not candidates. And then anybody who isn't called, because the first part of your question, I answer it in kind of an maybe an unsatisfactory way, but the people that are candidates are those that are called to do this. Very simply, they feel it. They can't get around the fact that there's a tug to do this. And whether you're depressed or happy as a clam, like no matter where you're at in your journey, if you're called, at least as far as I'm concerned, in the circles that I do, you're welcome, you know, for whatever that reason is, as long as you are physically and emotionally stable enough, you know, because it is an intense journey. So that's the only prerequisite, the calling and having some degree of being able to handle a wild ride.
What have you seen with the outcome or the experience, somebody who comes with a clear intention of wanting to heal versus somebody who wants to come and get high?
Well, I tend to be very careful about not letting people with the latter intention come in because they're going to get humbled. If they think this is just a fun time on drugs, they're going to be in for a rude awakening. And that's often not a fun experience for me as the person holding space, for the individual, for the room, because it can be a no, I didn't want to do actual work. I just want to have fun. That's not how Aya plays. So when people come with that willingness to look at the things that are difficult and painful, it tends to be a lot more graceful because they have, well, they don't have such a limited view of what they want the experience to be. Because it could be the best night of your life. It could be the worst night of your life. It could be both, actually. And to have some willingness to be fluid with the experience and to trust it anyway, it's a lot more, it's easier to work with that. People that want fun times on drugs, this is not their medicine.
So if you come with a clear intention, can you be sure that that person leaves with what they want?
I can be sure they're going to leave with what they need, though. And sometimes that aligns. Sometimes what we're aware of that we want for our highest good is bullseye accurate. Sometimes it's not. But I can promise you that the experience will always give you more information about your intention, what you're working with, and give you the experience that you needed for the next step of your journey. But it is difficult managing expectations because people can leave disappointed or overwhelmed, confused, like you name it. That's why integration is such a big deal. Like anybody that's called to do this, we also want them to know that they may need support in the aftermath. You know, have that in place. They may not, by the way, but it's not just about the ceremony. It's about, as you mentioned, the preparation, the experience, the integration. The whole thing matters.
I want to touch on integration a little bit later, but to start with, let's say somebody decides now, okay, I'm going to drink ayahuasca. What or how does one prepare? And then how do you find a safe space to do this medicine?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a big one. Okay, so preparation. There's a diet that we follow. It's essentially a very bland, clean diet to prepare the body for the medicine. So you want to kind of stay away from at least 3 to 5 days in advance, like salt and sugar and spices and gluten and dairy and all, you know, processed foods, just eating a very clean, bland diet. The best thing to do for beyond, you know, just prepping the body is to have a relationship with meditation. To have some practice of just being and observing rather than identifying with the internal process, because it is a meditation. So, you know, sitting with ayahuasca is essentially a meditation. It's an altered space for the meditation, but still, you know, it's an opportunity to go deep within. So anything we do in preparation to practice flexing that muscle of being present is extremely helpful to the ceremony. People that have a hard time often aren't used to just sitting and being with their emotions and their thoughts and the chaos that we all carry because we have these wild, crazy egos and minds. So that's basically the preparation. I mean, every circle has a different recommendation for what to do, but we're preparing our body and our spirits for a journey. How to find a safe place? Well, First of all, you know, we got to ask a lot of questions when we go and sit with somebody right now, because there's a lot of people stepping forward that have maybe drank the medicine 10 times and have decided, I know how to do this. And my analogy with that is that that's like watching Grey's Anatomy and saying, surgery, I got it. I can do it. Trust me, everybody, I got it. It's a really complicated process. I mean, the lineage that I studied, it's a minimum 7 years before you can pour a single cup of medicine that you are apprenticing. That's a minimum. It took me 10 years. I was apprenticing for a decade before I poured a single cup of medicine, because it's serious business, just like it is to go to med school and have physical safety. You know, we're creating spiritual and physical safety for people. So you want to ask questions of the circle that you're sitting with. Where did they train? How long did they train? What's in the medicine? Because a lot of times people are buying things off the internet. They don't even really know. You know, we have a brewmaster in the jungle that I only work with him, because we want to know exactly, not just what's in the medicine, the exact ratios, like the potency that we're dealing with. It's a big deal. So you basically want to do all of the vetting you would for a medical professional that you're going to trust with your physical safety. It's the same thing. Ask a lot of questions and trust your instincts. We typically know when it doesn't feel safe, and a lot of us will push through that of like, oh, I'm probably being dramatic. No, this is not the place to not trust your instincts and then to find out you were right to be suspicious, because it's tricky business, and safety means that you feel confident and trusting of the people in the container. If you don't feel that, you're not going to be able to surrender, which is the name of the game with this. So it's kind of like, why bother if you don't feel safe for any reason?
I know we talked about some of the benefits to drinking the medicine. What are some of the negative side effects one can experience?
That's a question I wish people would ask more. Thank you for asking that, because as much as I am an advocate for the amazing, just healing possibilities of this medicine, the aftermath can be really difficult, because healing is a really painful process for a lot of us. We have to feel the symptoms of our trauma, of our illness, in order to get through it. It is not a light switch. So for people that are expecting that quick fix, there's often a huge disappointment in the aftermath of, wait a second, I'm still me. Like, instead of emphasizing the fact like, oh my goodness, I think I might have released some things, I may have learned some things, quite often people come out of it going, yeah, but I'm not fixed. Well, that's never the point. And if we have the expectation that ayahuasca is a cure for essentially being human, yeah, we're going to be severely let down. So going in with the expectation of knowing that it is a process, that, you know, you might get to feel better, but you might not be enlightened or be healed completely, because that's a process. I mean, it's going to take me, if we consider Christ consciousness or Buddha or whatnot as the highest human experience, I'm going to need a little more than another 40 years to get there, is my guess, right? So if we expect ayahuasca to bring us there, she'll bring us closer, you know, but the expectations that we go in have a lot to do with how we're going to feel in the aftermath. The other piece of that is, if people are working with like severe addictions, severe emotional issues, like my bipolar diagnosis, quite often what will happen is when, like, I had alcoholism, right? That got pretty dealt with early on with the medicine, but then I had to deal with the reason why I was an alcoholic to begin with, which was anxiety and trauma and sadness. And so it peeled back this layer of, this is what you were running from. That sucked, to be perfect. Yeah. And it was completely necessary. So if we have this idea of, oh, you know, healing, I'm going to get through my addiction and just suddenly not want to use the drugs anymore. Well, yeah, maybe. But then you get to figure out why it is that that happened to begin with. So it's a process. I guess that's what I'm emphasizing.
It kind of touches on like this sensationalism that is out there in the mainstream narrative of like, drink ayahuasca once and you're cured. And then you see people like yourself are a guide and facilitate this. This is your life purpose. But there's other people out there who also sit and drink this medicine more than once. And then you hear, well, why do you keep drinking it if you've already drank it and it healed you? So It's like what you're saying, like there is this idea, you should be able to just drink it once and you're cured. And really what it does is it opens up Pandora's box.
Exactly. Exactly. I think that's one of the things that triggers people about me the most is I've drank 1,000+ times and I'm still human. I'm still working on my shadow. I still have trauma and pain. I was like, yeah, but welcome to life. The difference though, between me pre-ayahuasca and me now is I'm okay with the whole journey. I get angry and it's awesome. I feel sadness and grief. That's okay. There's nothing in me anymore that is judging that process and saying, oh, I'm broken because I just felt fear because we lived through the craziest year ever, right? Like, no, but ayahuasca gave me the spaciousness of, oh, I get to feel these things. This is who I am as a conscious being. There's nothing wrong with me. Like, I sort of laugh at my previous bipolar diagnosis because I'm still that. I'm still neurotic. But it's beautiful and awesome and I celebrate it rather than feel this like heaviness of being broken. So that's a big piece that you're bringing in is she doesn't change us from being human beings. She gives us the opportunity to love this journey that we're on, that we get to feel the whole spectrum of emotions. That's kind of the point of being here.
Yeah, it's so interesting. The whole, I mean, something you and I have talked endlessly about with myself, right, is like the judgment I hold of why am I this way? Why am I this way? And as you're sharing this and what you've learned, yes, like that's ultimately where we're all trying to get to is self-love. You have an immense amount of acceptance and self-love, which is why I just adore you. Because you're accepting. People want to be in the presence of somebody who can accept them unconditionally. That's really kind of the core, right, of ayahuasca, is bringing you back to yourself.
I had to whittle it down. What you're saying, it's so deeply resonates with me. It's like basically she teaches us to say yes to our lives. And it sounds so simple. Like our minds go, yeah, but that's not the secret to happiness. Is it though? To just say, well, this is what's happening. I accept it. I'll work with it. Yes, I say yes, because I have discovered through her that the core of suffering is resistance. It's the conflict with who we are and what's happening in our lives. And we are always in control of that. That's the good news.
So what are the misconceptions people have most about you? I think you mentioned, like, people think, well, you've drank it so much, you should be enlightened. Then you're like, nope, I'm just a normal person. I have anxiety. My life can be a shit show. Is there anything else that is misperceived about you or people that drink?
I think there's a misconception about the role of being a shaman or a facilitator, that we're somehow these magical wizards that are not human. We learn tools that are quite magical, but what I've discovered is we all have this ability. It, you know, humans, we're so freaking powerful and amazing, but we're so conditioned to be limited and to not like ourselves and to not be aware of the magic that we can co-create with the universe. And so to me, that's all, you know, this process has been, is waking me up to this ability to make magic out of any situation. And that's not unique to a shaman. That's the right of a human being. So there's all these misconceptions about the work around being an ayahuasca, working with this medicine, including what you mentioned of, oh, you must be in this constant state of happiness. Nope, not that, but that's okay.
Is this medicine for people who have suicide ideation, or is it a little too dangerous?
Well, there's a difference between the suicidal ideation and full scale, like being truly suicidal, right? I lived with suicidal ideation for 20+ years, where I was thinking about it sometimes all the time. And it's absolutely for those people that, you know, because people like that, myself included, it's not so much that I wanted to die. I just didn't want to live. That's a big difference. Like, I needed help learning how to live. And the medicine is magic for that. Nobody put it in that language for me then. That would have been so helpful to hear. Because the truth of it is, I really didn't want to die. I just didn't know how to make it here in any way that felt remotely happy. Like, it was tough going. And I know a lot of people feel that way. 2020 didn't help at all.
You know, that you said it so well. I mean, just, you know, being on the crisis line. They're calling because they don't want to die. Even though on a scale of 1 to 5, and if they're a 5, they're still calling for that glimpse of hope. Just show me who I am. Just give me this feeling of connection that they can't connect. I love how you put that. Ayahuasca shows us, reminds us how to live. So back to, you've done a ceremony. You have the aftermath. Integration. You don't hear a lot about that. You know, you in out in the mainstream of what ayahuasca is or how important it is. Can you touch on why it is so imperative to integrate and what that looks like?
Absolutely. In my heart, it's more important than the ceremony itself is what you do with it afterwards. Because let's just say it was the best night of your life and you connected with your ancestors and all this insight about your beingness came in and how to be happy in the world. What good does that do if you don't take the time to really embody it, to integrate it into your daily life? That it just becomes a memory of, oh, I remember that night in ayahuasca. But if it doesn't impact your everyday life, like, it was great, it was a fun experience, but it didn't change things, right? So integration, whether the experience with the medicine and the ceremony was beautiful or difficult or all of it, is literally the most important part of the process. And integration, it essentially means completion. It means that we take what we learned, what we experienced, and we embody it. And the best way, in a very general kind of description, to do that is to have a daily spiritual practice. To have something that you do every day that helps to, first of all, create a balance of doing and being. You know, just being with yourself. Even if it's 10 minutes a day, it's powerful just to say, how do I feel? What's going on with me? What am I excited about? Like, just to check in. And it's crazy how many of us don't do that. That it's just up on our phones, back to work, go, 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 parenting, whatever. You know, our lives are so busy. But we got to have a balance of that. And integrating a ceremony experience, the core of it is having a daily spiritual practice. Having a commitment to being kind to ourselves every day in some way or fashion. It will help integrate whatever happened, whether it was traumatic or thrilling or heart-opening or whatever, you know, taking time to feel it, to process it, to make sense of it, to acknowledge it, that is the heart of integration. And how we do that on a personal level, you know, that really depends on what you're working with, what your intentions were going in, how you're feeling in the aftermath. But I can promise you that everyone benefits from having that daily spiritual check-in of, you know, parenting ourselves and connecting with ourselves.
Mm. And you coach people, right? Like, you have a coaching business specifically designed for integration.
Yeah, I started it many years ago because I noticed what you said of like, wow, nobody's talking about this. And I went to the jungle for the second time, flew back to LA, got in a cab and saw a sign for a strip club and lost my mind, just started bawling and crying, and I had nobody to talk to, and I was just like, oh, the world is so crazy. And somewhere in there, I was like, gosh, wouldn't it be nice to have somebody around that got this, that could talk me through it? And that's where the seedling of being an integration, a psychedelics integration coach, like, came from. Thankfully, Ashley, it's having a renaissance. This is getting more attention right now, but it's been a long time coming because people get lost and traumatized because your whole world can change. And even if that's an expansive thing, it's confusing as all get out in the beginning. It's really lovely to have somebody say, this is normal, you're doing great, you want this, and to feel like you have permission to shift and change. Mm. And that nothing bad happened, because you don't know for a while sometimes.
And you also do coaching with people who've never drank ayahuasca, correct?
Sure, absolutely. I mean, I work with anybody that just wants to know their spiritual beings in a deeper way. And I also work with people who are transitioning, who have a terminal diagnosis and want to connect with what death really means while they're still in a body.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that. Did I leave anything out that you feel is so important for people listening who are curious about ayahuasca?
Well, again, I'll emphasize that we got to trust our intuition. with this kind of idea of going to sit and do a dramatic altered space like this. It's becoming kind of the thing to do. It's, you know, 15 years ago when I started this, nobody had heard of it. I was the weird girl going to the jungle. Now, grandmothers who have never had a sip of alcohol in their lives are like, I'm going to go drink ayahuasca, which is awesome. I love that this is the world we're living in now and the decriminalization and all the things that are happening. But as we have talked about today, it is not for everyone at every moment of your life. You really got to know that you feel called to do the work. And I really emphasize it's work. It's hard work, because what we're trying to achieve, a higher state of consciousness, a deeper space of embodiment and healing, these are the greatest gifts that our journey of being conscious have to offer. So yeah, they're worth working for. But it is not like, it's just a magic like tea and I'm going to drink it and feel amazing. So, but to trust our, you know, everybody to trust their intuition of knowing like, okay, it's time and I'm ready and willing to go explore myself, to learn things maybe I didn't know before, and to get uncomfortable. It's a very uncomfortable process. And that's by design.
So would you say that regardless of how that journey looks while you're on the medicine, good or bad or whatever you perceive, could you almost, I hesitate saying this, guarantee in a way that whatever it looks like, you will have a deeper sense of connection to self, even if it doesn't feel like that in the moment?
100%. Yes. I can guarantee that, but what I can't guarantee is will the person perceive it that way? Because we have preconceived notions of what it means to be connected. But if it was our turn to connect with our shadow, to know in a more profound way what the darkness is all about, that may not feel like connection. That may feel like torture. But it's part of consciousness, right? It's part of our sovereignty of being awake beings to know darkness and light. So I can guarantee this experience is going to give you more information about what it is to be conscious. I can't guarantee you're going to like it every time.
And yeah, we didn't touch on really, if you want to expand on the shadow self in so many words, but not those words we talked about, like how it's not comfortable. It's not comfortable because you're seeing your shadow, right?
Well, sure. Yeah. But it's really, I'm glad you asked this, because the shadow in our typical language is the parts of us that we're uncomfortable with, our guilt, our shame, our fear, our resistance. But Carl Jung, who's the godfather of shadow work, also defined that part of our shadow is what he called the golden shadow. It's our potential. It's all the amazing superpowers that live within us that we haven't yet completely tapped into. So shadow work isn't just about dredging up the darkness. It's also like, who am I as a superhero? And we're damn uncomfortable with our power. That's where I see people squirm the most. Most people are like, okay, yeah, we'll go through our suffering. But when you find out, wait a second, I am this powerful, I am this capable, that's scary to confront that. So shadow work is about essentially exploring what we didn't know about ourselves. And it's not all bad news, but it all it involves a transformation that is uncomfortable, because we have to expand out of our idea of our current selves in order to become what we discover we can be, right?
The power that we hold and that we can sense is more scary than going, okay, I can sit with all this dark shit and this suffering.
Because it carries a higher degree of responsibility. When we discover how powerful we are as humans. Ayahuasca has an expression she likes to say around this: the person with highest degree of awareness in a room holds the highest level of responsibility. And we see in our culture every single day what it looks like to abuse power. Our politicians, our doctors, our lawyers, the people that we put on pedestals of, ooh, you're powerful. When they abuse that power, it's really ugly. And I know for a lot of us, myself included, it's scary to think, could I do that? And we all have it in us. I like to say there's a Hitler and a Mother Teresa in all of us.
I love that.
To acknowledge the Mother Teresa means to acknowledge the Hitler. You can't do one without the other. And so a lot of us would like to pretend that we're Clark Kent and not Superman, because it's easier. Because it's like, I can just do my 9 to 5 and just show up in a mediocre way and that's enough. But we are capable of so much more. But when we tap into that, there's a deep responsibility of what are you going to do with that power? Because power can go any direction. It can enlighten and heal and awaken people. It can also create destruction, right? Creation and destruction are our best buddies. They're two sides of the same coin. And so if we want to tap into that, we have to have the maturity and the responsibility what we're going to do with that, because there are repercussions if not.
So well said. So well said.
Because I've really had to go deep with this myself to step into a role of owning more power because of ayahuasca. And it's something I work with all the time because I resist the responsibility because I don't ever want to hurt anyone. I don't ever want that karma. It's a big deal to be powerful. This is near and dear to my heart.
So another plant that I know you work very intimately with is San Pedro, which is not so mainstream. What is San Pedro and how is that complementary to ayahuasca?
San Pedro, he's my favorite in terms of the experience. He's also known as Huachuma. That's his indigenous name. Huachuma is the cactus that grows really all the way from the base of the Andes to the very top of the Andes. And the core alkaloid in it is the same core alkaloid in peyote. So peyote is a cousin, the Native American medicine, to Huachuma. So where ayahuasca is like a meditation, and we refer to her as a she, it's a very feminine spirit, right? Huachuma, San Pedro, is grandpa. It's a masculine spirit that is a beautiful complement to the divine feminine of Aya, because when we work with him in ceremony, they are polar opposites. Ayahuasca we do at night in darkness as a meditation, going deep within our experience. Huachuma, you want to do him in the daytime because he wants to use your senses to connect with nature, with consciousness, with the spirit of the earth, with each other, with people, with yourselves. Like he's a heart medicine. And what he does is he helps to slowly quiet the ego. Like it takes hours when you're deep with Huachuma to finally realize, wait a second, I'm not thinking the way that I normally do. I'm just feeling. You know, I like to joke with Huachuma that when we do ceremonies with him, there will always be that person that's been crying and laughing and moving through all of their emotions. And they come up for a second dose of the cactus medicine. And they're like, I'm not really feeling it. Like, you are, because it's a deeply felt medicine. That's what makes it really unique and different. So it is a hallucinogen, but you have to work with it on a very high potency and get the hallucinations or the visuals, we call them. But he will start to like allow you to start seeing the world as it really is. The life force of plants, the clouds start doing a puppet show. Like your vision starts to shift and change, but I don't feel it's hallucinations. I feel like the veil is being lifted of what we typically carry and not seeing the world as it really is. So yeah, he's a hallucinogen. It's just really different than like the DMT experience that ayahuasca has or psilocybin, mushrooms. You know, they all just have such different ways of expanding and waking us up.
And so how does that complement Aya, like if you do a back to back?
I do. And the reason why I like doing that is we were, you know, talking about Aya being a medicine that helps us to go deep within. And it exposes things that, you know, are difficult to integrate. And if you work with Huachuma, right after doing some deep dives with ayahuasca, he helps you to start making sense of what the heck just happened because he's embodiment medicine. Because the heart has the wisdom, the mind, not so much. I think it's a smart one in the room, but not really. And so because Huachuma helps us to feel things and to get back into being connected with our bodies, he helps to also seal us up from this experience of being altered so that when we go back into the world the next day, it feels safer. It feels more complete. You know, going back into the world after drinking Aya can be quite traumatic. You know, there can be some time where you need to come back in and feel like you're embodied again. Huachuma just helps with that process. In addition, just to being such a beautiful, playful, heart-opening medicine to work with.
Okay. So it's really part of the integration process.
That's how we work with it. Yeah.
Okay. So would people ideally want to look for a place where they serve Aya two nights and then San Pedro the next day. So it's a 3-day ceremony.
Well, that's my favorite formula, but it's not that common. I mean, most places like to really focus on Aya. A few of them are starting to show up that they have Wachuma available too. It's not a prerequisite, I would say, that they must include Wachuma, but it's icing on the cake if they do. And there are also Wachuma experiences that have nothing to do with ayahuasca. You know, you can just work with them in sacred ceremony as the only medicine you're working with too. Some people are just called to working with them. So there are no rules. There's just, I developed a formula that works for me and the group that I work with, but you know, it's a very individual journey that we're on in choosing what medicines work for us.
And I want to know, where can people connect with you at?
Oh, well, first of all, thank you for having me in this beautiful conversation, asking such amazing questions. My nickname out there is the Afterlife Coach. So on social media, that's who I am. My website is afterlife.coach. That's how to find me.
Okay, perfect. Awesome. Well, Kat, thank you so much for sharing this.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
That's it for today's podcast. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen today. Please let me know what you think. Leave a comment, share, and we'll be back next week with a new episode.